You're listening to Agent Driven Development, real experiences from operators building with AI. Everything here is free. Use it, share it, just attribute it back.
The developer happiness movement worked. It worked spectacularly. And now it's breaking everything because the idea was wrong, because the constraint changed underneath it and nobody updated the playbook. Point O's. Let me take you back to 2008. Enterprise software organizations had a problem they couldn't see. They were optimizing for procurement relationships and audit compliance while systematically destroying productivity. Developers filled out 12 field forms to create a ticket. Architecture review boards mandated technologies that hadn't been relevant in 5 years. Change processes introduced 3-week delays for configuration changes that took 5 minutes to implement. The cost was invisible because nobody measured feature delivery velocity. They measured process compliance, whether the right forms were filled out, whether the architecture review board approved the technology choice, whether changes went through the CAB. Then the data arrived. Etsy was deploying 25 times per day with 75 engineers. Spotify scaled to 600 engineers with autonomous squads, while competitors with similar headcount could barely coordinate releases. The State of DevOps report showed deployment frequency correlated with stability, not inversely, as everyone assumed. The pattern was clear. Organizations giving developers control over their tools were shipping 3 to 5 times faster and losing far fewer people to attrition. The prescription seemed obvious. Give developers autonomy. Let them choose their IDE, their language, their frameworks. Hire smart people and get out of their way. Trust them to make good decisions. Measure outcomes, not compliance. It worked. And we called it developer happiness because that was the marketing-friendly way to describe what we were actually doing, removing organizational friction that prevented developers from being effective. Here's what people forget. Developer autonomy worked because human cognitive load was the constraint. A senior engineer who'd spent 6 years mastering Vim wasn't just comfortable with it, she was genuinely 40% more productive than if you forced her into Eclipse. That expertise was real. Tool mastery mattered when humans were writing code because learning curves were steep, muscle memory was productivity, and context switching killed flow state. The efficiency gains weren't theoretical, they were measurable. A developer fluent in their tool chain could maintain flow state for hours. Force them into unfamiliar tools and that flow shattered. They'd spend cognitive cycles on the tool instead of the problem. So we optimized for the constraint, we let developers choose tools that minimize their cognitive load, we removed organizational friction, we measured whether features shipped, not whether everyone used the same IDE. By 2020, this wasn't just best practice, it was culture, it was identity, it was how you attracted talent. The language of developer autonomy became so powerful that questioning it felt like arguing for command and control management. Now here's what nobody saw coming. Generative AI became production capable, not perfect, but real. Code that actually shipped. Most organizations saw this as a productivity tool. Another thing to make developers more effective. They applied the playbook that had worked for a decade. Let teams experiment. Let developers choose what works for them. Don't stifle innovation with premature standardization. It made sense. The language was right. The precedent was clear. Developer autonomy had worked before. Why wouldn't it work now? What everyone missed, what I missed initially, was that the constraint had fundamentally changed. Point O's. A generative AI agent doesn't have muscle memory. It doesn't need 6 months to ramp up on your code base. It doesn't experience cognitive load when switching between frameworks. It doesn't care if it's writing TypeScript or Python. It doesn't have tool preferences, as your humans do, but they're not writing code the same way anymore. They're orchestrating code writing agents, reviewing AI-generated implementations, steering architecture while AI handles implementation details. That's a different skill with different friction points. The constraint isn't, how do we minimize friction for human code generation anymore? The constraint is, how do we enable effective human AI collaboration at organizational scale? Those aren't the same thing. And the solution that worked brilliantly for the first problem creates catastrophic failure modes in the second. Frame that clarifies everything. AI in the SDLC isn't a personal productivity tool, it's infrastructure. You know this intuitively for other technologies. Nobody lets teams choose their own cloud provider based on personal preference. Not because you don't trust your engineers, because cloud is infrastructure. It needs centralized governance, vendor management, security review, cost optimization, expertise development. When something is infrastructure, you don't optimize for individual preference. You optimize for organizational capability you can govern, secure, and evolve. But you do let developers choose their IDE. Because an IDE isn't infrastructure, it's a personal tool. It affects individual productivity, but doesn't create organizational dependencies or introduce systemic risk. The question everyone's avoiding, which category does AI belong to? In early 2024, you could argue it was a personal tool, experimental, individual productivity enhancement. But watch what happened over 12 months. Teams started building workflows that assume AI generation. architecting systems around AI capabilities, training junior developers who've never written code without AI assistance, creating dependencies on specific platforms and their APIs. That's not a personal tool, that's infrastructure. And we're treating it like a text editor. Now let me tell you the pattern playing out right now. The most Fortune 500 engineering orgs, and you'll find 6 to 8 generative AI vendors being used across Temis. Some were approved through procurement, others were expensed on corporate cards. Nobody's tracking it centrally because teams own their tooling decision. If you're in this situation, I can tell you exactly what happens next. You're 6 to 9 months away from your CISO shutting it down, maybe 12 if your security team is understaffed or distracted. The pattern is predictable because I've watched it repeat. Teams expense AI tools individually. Engineering managers know, but they're focused on productivity, not governance. Security doesn't know because nobody told them. The tools aren't in your asset inventory. They're not in your vendor risk management system. They're just there, quietly sending your source code to APIs you don't control. Then something triggers discovery, an audit, cyber insurance renewal, a breach at one of the vendors makes the news, or your CISO just starts asking questions because they read something that made them nervous. Discovery, credit card statements, network traffic analysis, team surveys, the list comes back. 8 vendors, maybe 12. Your CISO asks the obvious question, who did the security review on these? Nobody did, because nobody thought they needed to. It was a productivity tool, like a better text editor. Except these tools have API access to your repositories. They're processing your proprietary algorithms, they're seeing customer data and test fixtures, they're ingesting code that contains your business logic, your competitive advantages, your security vulnerabilities. The questions start coming. Where is this data being stored? What's the data residency? Is it being used for model training? What happens when an employee leaves? Can they still access your code through their conversation history with the AI? What's your liability if this vendor gets breached? Can you detect if they get breached? Do your audit logs show what code was sent where? For most of these vendors, you don't have answers. Because the terms of service were never reviewed by legal. Because nobody ran them through vendor risk management. Because nobody thought to ask first. Your CISO does what CISOs do when they discover ungoverned risk. They shut it down. Not because they're anti-innovation, because they can't walk into the next board meeting and explain why your company's intellectual property is being sent to vendors you can't audit, under terms you haven't reviewed, with data protection controls you can't verify. Think of it simple. All AI tool usage stops until we have proper governance, security reviews for each vendor, legal review of Termis data protection assessments, integration with audit logging, the full vendor risk management process, which takes 90 days if you're phase sane 6, months if you're typical. Meanwhile, the teams that built their workflows around these tools are dead in the water. The productivity gains vanish overnight, not because the technology failed, because you treated infrastructure like a personal tool. I've seen this happen to 4 Fortune 500 companies in the last 18 months. Different industries, different maturity levels, different engineering cultures, same pattern, same timeline. The only variable is what triggers the discovery. So what does happiness actually mean now? This is where the conversation needs to evolve, because the 2015 framing of developer happiness doesn't map to the current reality. The 2015 version was remove organizational friction that prevents developers from being effective. Let them choose tools. Trust them to optimize their own productivity. That made sense when tools were personal and the constraint was human cognitive load. But you don't hear developers saying, I'd be happier if I could deploy some services to AWS and others to Azure based on my personal preference. Nobody frames cloud provider choice as a happiness issue. Why? Because everyone understands intuitively that infrastructure is different. Personal preference doesn't apply. What matters is, does this infrastructure let me build what I need to build? Is the organization using it competently? Am I working within reasonable constraints? That's the reframe for AI. Not, can I choose my favorite AI tool, but does our AI infrastructure let me be effective? Effective. The developers who left companies in 2015 over tooling weren't leaving because they couldn't use Vim. They were leaving because organizational dysfunction made it impossible to ship software. The tool choice was a symptom, not the cause. Similarly, good developers don't leave over which cloud provider you use. They leave when the infrastructure is poorly managed, when governance creates pointless friction, when leadership makes decisions without understanding the technical reality. The same logic applies to AI infrastructure. The developers who thrive aren't the ones with unlimited tool choice. They're the ones working in organizations that picked infrastructure they can actually govern. That invested in making people effective with it. That created real autonomy within clear constraints. That built space for people to challenge those constraints when they're not working. Now let me talk about the path forward and why it's harder than you think. If you've got ungoverned AI sprawl, you're facing a political problem as much as a technical one. You probably made a decision in 2024 to let teams experiment. That decision has your name on it. You defended it as preserving developer autonomy. Your VP presented it to the executive team. Teams have built workflows around these tools. Now you need to consolidate, and it feels like admitting you were wrong. Here's what I've learned from organizations that did this well. You can pivot if you're honest about what changed. The narrative isn't, we made a mistake. It's, we treated AI as a personal productivity tool. We've learned its infrastructure. The category changed, so our approach needs to change. That's not failure. That's updating your mental model. Start with a pilot, pick one team, give them a different approach, measure it honestly. If it works, you have proof. If it doesn't, you learn something without committing a whole organization. Give teams time to transition. 6 months to migrate to approved platform is. Make the path gradual enough that people can adapt without whiplash. And make space for dissent. Let people disagree publicly. Some will argue that standardization kills innovation, that you're reverting to the bad old days of 2008. Let them make their case in front of the team. Not because you're going to change your mind, but because shutting down dissent kills the organizational learning capability you're trying to build. Pause IDU. Fives. Here's what you're actually optimizing for. The goal was never happiness. The goal was removing friction that prevented effective work. In 2015, that friction was organizational dysfunction optimized for procurement and compliance instead of shipping software. Tool autonomy was the answer because the constraint was human cognitive load. In 2025, the friction is different. It's trying to govern ungovernable sprawl. It's teams fragmenting across incompatible platforms. It's your CISO being unable to answer basic questions about data protection. It's senior engineers spending cycles evaluating vendors instead of eliminating waste. The answer isn't reverting to command and control management. It's recognizing that AI is infrastructure and treating it accordingly. That means being clear about constraints. We need to govern this is legitimate. Legal requires audit trails is legitimate. The CISO can't approve 8 vendors is legitimate. Give people the actual constraints, not just the solution. It means giving real authority within those constraints. If you're creating an approved vendor list, let teams choose from it. If production needs standard platforms, let prototyping stay flexible. Don't standardize everything just because you're standardizing something. It means creating space to challenge the constraints. Your developers should be able to say, this constraint isn't serving us, and be taken seriously. If someone proposes a governance framework that allows more flexibility, listen. Treat constraints as problems to solve, not walls to accept. And it means investing in the transition. Don't just mandate a change and expect people to figure it out. Training, documentation, communities of practice, dedicated support. The organizations that skimp on this fail regardless of which approach they choose. The developer autonomy movement wasn't wrong. It solved a real problem. It produced measurable results. The instinct to preserve those gains is correct. But success patterns from one era become failure patterns in the next when the constraint changes. The organizations that win won't be the ones that pick perfectly in 2024. They'll be the ones that can adjust in 2025 when they have better information. That requires treating organizational learning as a capability, not course corrections as failures. The question isn't whether AI should be standardized. It's whether you can recognize when something stops being a personal tool and becomes infrastructure. Then make that transition without losing the trust and autonomy that made developer effectiveness work in the first place. Because that spirit still matters. We still want to remove friction. We still want to trust people to make good decisions. We still want to measure outcomes, not process compliance. What changed is what the friction looks like, what decisions actually matter, and what outcomes we need to measure. Same goal, different constraint, and the intellectual honesty to recognize when your playbook needs updating. That's the work. Not finding the perfect answer, but building an organization that can learn fast enough to keep up with how quickly the constraints are changing. That means recognizing AI as infrastructure. Everything else follows from that. This is Norman from Agent Driven Development.
That's it for this one. More at agentdrivendevelopment.com. If it helped, pass it on.